You're listening to Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next, we dig deep into our archives, back to 1993. We made a little history that day when we broadcast Science Friday over the Internet. Back then, the Internet was a fledgling network of computers, mostly being used by academics or the military, a far cry from the millions of computer users hooked in today. We actually slowed down traffic on the net that day because so many people were trying to tune into our broadcast. I want you to pay close attention, though, to a reference to global warming. This was made over 17 years ago, and if you think global warming is new, you can hear us talk about it almost 20 years ago. Just a reminder that this show aired in 1993, so we won't be able to take your calls, but here it is, a look back to the future of the Internet.
How do you describe the Internet? Well, to say that it's a network of over 10,000 computer networks is like describing the telephone system as billions of wires. It gives you some idea of how it's constructed, but not what it's used for. And that's what we hope to do this hour, to talk about the Internet and the creative things that can be done with this massive worldwide network. And to just illustrate one creative idea, we are broadcasting this program, Talk of the Nation, Science Friday, is going out live on the Internet. It's not going out as something somebody's typing very quickly, making a transcript and sending it out on a computer. No, our actual voices on this program. Our voices are going out to computer terminals around the world where people are able to hear it coming through their computers. And this is unique. We're going to be able to hear some people on those computers talk back to us via the Internet, something that has never been done on radio before via the Internet. How are we able to do that? Okay, that's a good place to start. Let me introduce the man responsible for hooking up the system for us today on the Internet. Carl Malamud is president of Internet Multicasting Service, which runs, among other things, Internet Talk Radio, a radio network that sends its programming through computers instead of the airwaves. Carl Malamud is sitting with me here in our New York studios. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ira.
Tell me how you're able to get us on the Internet. What is happening with all these wires and things?
Well, we've put you on in a variety of different ways. We want to illustrate that there's different levels of technology, and you can play in the game with cheap technology. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple computers right here in the studio. We've got a cellular modem, so we're actually using radio waves to send electronic mail back and forth, mm-hmm. and a plain old modem that uses a telephone line. So that's way number one.
Okay.
We set up an electronic mail account for you, and you, as you've seen, gotten over 300 mail messages in the last few days.
But in us going out over the Internet, you're taking this radio program and we're sending it out to a giant computer in California.
And
right?
That's the fun part. What we have is
Palo Alto Research Center.
We have Ron Frederick and his able assistant Steve Deering out at Xerox Palo Alto Research Center. You know, that's where it all began. That's where computing, modern computing, really began. And what they've done is they've hooked up the Internet computer network to the world of National Public Radio so that people sitting in front of their computers have a microphone and a speaker. And they're hearing you and they can talk back to the radio. So it's as if you're sitting there listening to your radio, to your fireside chat, and the president says something you don't like, and you turn to him and say, well, that's nonsense.
Mm-hmm. They just told us before we went on the air that there are about 100 people waiting to talk to us on the Internet back.
And they're all over the world. There's people in Australia, there's people in England, there's people in Sweden.
And you broadcast other things besides our radio program.
I sure do. Rebroadcast the hearings on encryption and privacy that Congressman Markey did a couple weeks ago. We have our regular rebroadcasters of the National Press Club luncheons. And so we put the Dalai Lama on the Internet. We put Senator Bob Dole on the Internet. And we do that on a regular basis. We're one of the three networks that regularly rebroadcast the National Press Club luncheons.
Have you ever done this interactive on your network before, like we're doing today?
Not with Radioland. We did something called the Global Schoolhouse Project, and we took kids all over the world, and we gave them a chance to talk to White House officials and NASA officials using just simple Macintosh computers. But in terms of hooking up the land of the radio to the land of the computer network, first time it's ever been done, which is why we have people like Steve Deering at Xerox Park helping us.
Right. We're making history here today.
You bet. That's right.
And we also have sent out messages in advance asking people to suggest to us creative things to do with the Internet and things that they already do on the Internet that they find very useful. For example, I have a mail message here. David Hansen sent me an Internet message, and he said, during the Soviet push, I got firsthand accounts of the action from Moscow, and this is addicting, he writes. In a profession like teaching Russian politics, waiting for published journal articles is too great a penalty. So people were sending messages out of the Soviet Union. I've had a couple of these. I have another letter from G. Ernest Anderson, another email message from the University of Massachusetts. He said that the RELCOM, the Russian Electronic Communication Headquarters in Moscow, was telling him how to log on in mid-August of 1991 and then sending us stories of what people just in off the streets and barricades, what they saw, they did, they felt, getting email addresses, subsequently meeting these people. During the Russian, that Russian little coup that occurred?
The Russian internet was one of the key means of communication during that coup. It was a vital part of the tools that Yeltsin and others used during that period.
And this illustrates the global power of the internet. I mean, people might ask, gee, I already belong to CompuServe, I belong to Dialog or Genie or any of these things. Why? What advantage does being part of the internet give me that I don't have already with these other services?
I consider CompuServe to sort of be part of the internet in that you can send electronic mail, you can send messages, but to me CompuServe is like the suburbs. And there's nothing wrong with the suburbs, and I like strip malls and they're good things, but some people want the big city. And what you can do on a general purpose infrastructure like the internet is new things. With CompuServe, you can do what they told you to do, which is good. With the internet, if some guy has a bright idea, like wants to do radio or wants to do Waze or something like that, you can do it. You don't need to get the people that run the internet, because there are no people that actually run it. This is just a very loose cooperative of networks working together, and you can do new things. You can build on them.
Well, let me bring in my next guest. Is someone who is leading an effort to build a practical system for users of the internet to find and retrieve information. And there is so much information on there, you really need something to stand between you and it, or it will flood in. Brewster Kahle, he's president of a company called Waze that you just heard Carl talk about. He's also here with me in our New York studios. Welcome to the program. You have software that resides on the internet that makes it easier for people to use this system. Would that be correct?
Absolutely. The basic idea is we put out some software about 2 years ago by posting it for free on the internet, and people all over the world have been downloading and using it, creating new collections of information in 12 countries. There are now 420 things that you can probe from your desktop.
420 databases you can get into?
Absolutely.
Using the Waze system.
Absolutely. And you can use your PC or your Macintosh or dial-up terminals. You can even send electronic mail to Waze.
Let's go to the phones now because I think we have some very interesting calls here. Let's first now go to Gail in Miami. Hi, you're on Science Friday.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
My name is Gail Clements. I'm a research librarian at Florida International University, and I provide reference and research services to all different kinds of scientific and engineering researchers. Mm-hmm. And we've been finding that the internet has just revolutionized the scholarly communication process, the way that colleagues confer with each other, convene electronically to chit-chat, to schmooze, to post a manuscript where they can all scrutinize it over the internet. And it really has taken the place of people being in their offices and walking down the hallway to visit a colleague.
One person here on an email, a message I got on the internet, called it the universal water cooler.
Maybe
the coffee pot or something else is another metaphor, but that's the way you see it as being
right.
Very
well,
useful.
It levels the status. So you can be a beginning graduate student, you can be a leading expert in the field, and you may all be part of the same discussion group. Mm-hmm. So you really level the playing field in terms of...
Do you work the internet out of your library?
We don't give all the patrons access. Right now, the research and the faculty, those members of the community, do have free access. Mm-hmm. At any time of the day or night. It's just supported through our computing services. Mm-hmm. But to undergraduates or public members of the community, they would not have access at this point.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Of course, a lot of people love to schmooze on the internet. I mean, we got a letter from one person who said, here, if I can find it. Oh, here it is. This is one of the unusual letters I got. Let me see where I can get it from. From Merrill Geist. I hope I did justice to that name. Who says, the internet made a big hit down at the Rotary Club one recent luncheon. I was called about an hour before the meeting and tabbed to do the Sunshine Report, a guest introduction that must include good, clean jokes. I didn't have any jokes, so he writes, internet to the rescue. I sat down at the terminal and called up to find text on humor. I had a complete archive of jokes, she found. I found a complete archive of jokes on the internet in a matter of an hour. Saved somebody the embarrassment of having to find. This is a very typical story.
Oh, absolutely. You can find jokes. You can find Shakespeare. You can find even useful information.
and it could come from anywhere in the world, and you really don't know where it's coming from. I remember I was using the internet, and I looked for something on orchids, and I got a response from Australia. It just blew me away. Someone who's hard to impress. It was just unbelievable.
The new communities that are coming up around the internet are the most fascinating for most of us. We're starting to become good friends with people we've never physically met. And the idea that it's actually going to keep us in our homes and make it so that we don't have to travel, I think is actually absolutely false. We're starting to get on planes more to actually go and put a face behind some of these connections that we've been making, these global villages rather than one global village that we're constructing.
All right, let's go to the internet and take our first call on the internet. Steve in Stockholm, Sweden. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Yeah, hi there. It's nice to be here and here in Stockholm, and I'd like to say...
Breaking up a bit.
That's probably one of the longest links to get over to Sweden, and what we find is as we go through slower and slower lines to get across the ocean, it makes it harder to move the audio through.
So there's a lot of compression going on here? Or
There's compression and there's packet loss, because remember, this is not a dedicated line. This is part of the general purpose infrastructure, and so we're sending voice, but someone else may have started a big database search at the same time.
Oh, I see.
That might interfere.
Let me see if Steve... Is Steve still there in Stockholm? Steve, we missed a little bit of what you were saying.
I sure am. I am still here in Stockholm. I hope I'm coming through, and I want to say hello to Carl there.
Hello, Steve.
All right, Steve, thanks for calling. Let's see if we can go to Tom in San Diego. We may get a little better line being a little closer. Tom, you're on Science Friday.
Thank you. How does it sound?
Much better.
Good. I'm next to a construction site, which is sort of an off-the-net problem. For me, the Internet has been very important for about the last decade. And now my children use it, two boys, 7 and 3, and they're getting ready for some electronic mail pen pals.
Now, let's make it clear to everyone who's listening that you're not on the telephone, are you?
No, I'm sitting in front of a workstation, and I have a microphone and a speaker, and I can see a list of the people who are getting ready to talk, and I can hear your voice.
Is this something that only someone with a big computer can do?
The computer I've got is about the size of a phone book. It's a Unix workstation. It's about $8,000 investment. And while I'm doing this, I'm also reading electronic mail and doing a little programming, waiting for my turn.
And how much email do you get on the internet in your normal day? Do you get a lot of people?
Anywhere from 20 to 130 messages a day.
Oh, you're a lucky 200. Person.
Why do you say that, Carl?
Oh, I get a good 300-400 mail messages a day coming in because of internet talk radio, people having questions.
And you're talking to so many people around the world that you really, it gets to be a glut of information. My father-in-law, Bert, said that he compares it to, he just read an article in a paper about it, to the Sorcerer's Apprentice, where all those brooms came back with all that water. You don't ask for all that stuff, and suddenly it comes back, and you don't know what to do with it.
Well, you know, that's true. But on the other hand, if you go into a library and look at that library and say, I'm going to read every single book because it's there, you've got a glut of information, too. And one of the things we're learning how to do is how to ignore information. And that's one of the most important things the Internet will let you do.
In fact, these glut of email messages that we both send and receive, we're starting to become accountable for at least knowing that it's out there. So being able to move through it is trying to keep this information anxiety, people from being overloaded, is what the computers are being used for instead of just transporting the stuff to us.
Thanks, Tom, for calling. Let's go to Pat in Central Wisconsin. You're next on Science Friday. Welcome.
I'm so excited. I have to tell you, I look on this kind of technology as being the opportunity to end the geographic isolation that people like myself feel, you know, in rural areas where sometimes you don't go out for months, you know. I think that this is media of the people. And when you were talking about a glut of information in the media we're using now, we get a glut of that, but it's all been filtered through the reporters. I think this is media of the people. And one of the new things that I hope this technology can do is really redesign government. I see an enormous potential there. And I'll listen to the radio now, and thank you for the program.
All right, thanks for calling. If it means anything to you, Pat, we actually got an email message from Jock Gill, Office of Media Affairs at the White House, who heard about our program and wanted to thank us for doing it. And so there are people who are interested, and the White House has a box on email that they use?
You bet. White House is very interested in using the internet these days, and it's really encouraging to see the steps that they're taking. These are people that really want to open up government and at least be able to communicate with people.
And, if you want to get on the internet, you can go through the more or less sites that are available to everybody, CompuServe, Genie, America Online. There's a gateway through that mail, is there not? You don't have to be an email user at this time. You can send mail back and forth.
Absolutely. There's also things called freenets and public access systems, and they're coming in all over the place. There's public access internet nodes showing up in many, many cities.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call from the internet. Okay, let's go to the University of Delaware. I think it's Ajit. Is that your name? Ajit, are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Hi, how are
Very
you?
Exciting.
How are you today? I noticed that we cannot speak at the same time. It makes it a little more difficult. So I'll just ask you, do you have a comment you'd like to make?
Being a graduate student with the access to the internet, we have a variety of entertainment. One such thing, Dungeon and Dragon games, where you act.
So you like to play these games on the internet, and you can play them with two people, one on each end of the internet. All right, we're having a little yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, the multi-user dungeons are very popular, so-called MUDs on the internet, and it's actually more than just two people. You can get whole crowds; hundreds of people will go and gather in these virtual worlds, typing to each other, and you don't quite know who you're talking to. But they're great fun. They're set up around sometimes university structures, or they're a bar, and you just hang out and have a good time with the other people that are hanging around in the bar.
Let me ask you about this audio problem that we're having with the internet a little. It seems to me the internet is in a very crude stage. I asked both of you today, Brewster, you described the road we're on in the internet as...
If we're moving towards a data superhighway, right now we're on a rough and bumpy road. You get saddle sore and dusty by moving over it.
Mm-hmm. And we're in a very early stages of what we might think that data superhighway that we keep hearing about.
Well, but it is a road, and I think one of the reasons it's so crucial that we invest in this infrastructure, and it is an infrastructure. It's like a telephone system or a road system. And in the early days of radio and the early days of the telephone of roads, they were hard. I mean, roads were things that people at first were, had difficulty using. There were toll roads. It was hard to get them constructed, and it took a while to get that system to work. Mm-hmm. And I think it's crucial over the next 20 or 30 years that we begin looking at that and investing in that infrastructure.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back to hear more from our 1993 show on the future of the internet, this in our 20th anniversary year of Science Friday. So stay with us. Welcome back to Science Friday. Let's listen more to our archived 1993 show on the future of the internet.
Let's go now to the phones and go to Helen in San Diego. You're next on Science Friday. Welcome, Helen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking the call.
Thank you.
I'm an older woman, and I'm strictly a print person, and I've had a question for years on this use of computer information. How do you determine whether you're getting information, misinformation, disinformation? You know, if you read a book, you look at the bibliography, there's perhaps a foreword by someone you know. You have some way of calculating the believability of what you're reading. With this information flooding in from all over, how do you know what you're getting?
Good question. Brewster, do you want to tackle that?
Yeah, basically the same sorts of things happen in the computer world as it does in the print world. You trust who told it to you. So if you wanted to know what Clinton wanted to say, you actually go to the Clinton server at the White House and you ask it. I've got a window up right now and I can ask and find out what his economic policy is. And that's coming from the White House. So I'm going to trust that as opposed to necessarily going through a lot of intermediary steps. What the internet allows you to do is go directly to the source.
You can go to prime sources instead of reading a newspaper. You can go to the source the newspaper got.
Absolutely.
Well, but we're also getting publishers on the internet. Certain publishers you know do good books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Helen, I understand your concern, because if there's so many sources of information, you want to know who to trust on the internet, and you have no way of knowing who these people are, do you?
That's right. I suppose the sheer volume is one of the things that puzzles me. The main thing you do with information is make some judgments or use of it, and when there's such a flood of it, I would think you might get people knowing more than they knew what to do with.
Well, but it's the same thing with any source of information. When I walk into the Library of Congress, I'm pretty awed by looking at all those books, and
yes,
I have to figure out a way to navigate through that maze.
Very true. To me,
a computer network's no different than that.
But you also have a research librarian or someone there who can sort of give you the pointers of how to go.
Is there something like that on the internet?
There's
software and there's people. I mean, you can always... What I do a lot of times when I see a huge archive of information, mm-hmm. I send electronic messages to somebody and say, well, you know, what should I look at? What's important? Or I use the automated tools that are out there to start searching through and narrowing it down. That's one of the big things that Waze does, is helps you sift through information efficiently.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of information that is standard information, like reference libraries, Ellen, like, you know, you go to a library and say, I can't get to the library. How can I find out something about some information? Yeah, okay?
Right.
Thanks for calling. Now, someone who is on the internet like you, what do you see on the screen? What is happening on the screen at that point?
Well, right now, all I'm seeing is basically a dumb screen, a list of messages, and I can read them. Now, when I'm at home on my workstation, I get a nice graphical interface, and I can point to things. And
it's a little more like a Macintosh that you have running over there.
Yeah, I've got a Macintosh here that's got a nice graphical user interface that's hooked right into the internet.
So anybody who's used to using a computer screen and getting mail on their computer screen or CompuServe will just... will have about the same sort of results by using the internet. It will look the same on
their screen.
Of course, it is a little more, it's a little cruder in these days on a PC because you don't have that graphical interface that he's using. But are there programs on the PC that will give it a graphical interface?
Oh, you bet, absolutely. Yeah. There's a half a dozen programs that run under Windows and give you nice touchy-feely interfaces. Mm-hmm. I'm of the old school of computers. I like to do it the hard way.
Okay, nothing wrong with that. My guest this hour, Carl Malamud, who's president of the Internet Multicasting Service over his network, NPR Science Friday, is being carried this afternoon. And Brewster Kahle, who's president of Waze Incorporated. All right, let's go to the phones and the internet. Do we have any new messages coming?
We are flooded with new messages.
Anything of real interest on our...
Well, a lot of people are saying, what a great show you're doing here.
We get that all the time. That's not it. But
people are coming in with questions. We just got a mail message from somebody saying they're seeing some record usage on the net. Everybody wants to talk to you, which is one of the reasons we're getting such bad audio response.
I see. It's really clogging the system.
Well, this happens on occasion. Audio and video is big stuff, and that's one reason we need to get that infrastructure in place so that we can do these kinds of applications.
We're too successful. That's the problem. Okay, let's try getting on the internet again to Dave in Pasadena. Dave, are you there on the internet?
Yeah, I am. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Wonderful. How's it going, everybody?
Just fine. How you
Great.
Doing?
I'm sitting here in front of my workstation, kind of listening to all the stuff talked about on the program. And I was real curious as to if anyone had a timetable for this kind of stuff reaching the public access, like, you know, everyone that has cable getting a internet feed or you know, it being as common as the, let's say, telephone.
When is it going to be a worldwide practical network?
There's a magic number in which a system is powerful enough that you can do useful things. And the magic number with personal computers was when the 8386s came out. Okay, the magic number with the internet is 64,000 bits per second. And we have technology deployed around the country called ISDN, mm-hmm. which allows you to get that in the home with today's existing wiring.
That's the rate of
That's right.
information.
That's how fast it goes. A typical modem runs at 9,600 bits per second or mm-hmm. less. And what we're talking about is a factor of 6 increase. And mm-hmm. my theory is you hit that magic mark and things explode.
Dave, are you still there in Pasadena?
I sure am.
What use do you most put the internet to? What do you like to do with it, or how is it most useful to you?
Well, I kind of like to listen to music or I'd like to download libraries of the CD collections or whatever music. Let's say I find some song I really like, it'd be nice to go to like Sony or RCA or wherever these record companies are and download a particular song. And if I like it, you know, upload a credit card number.
I see you're saying instead of having to go buy a CD, you could just download the CD on the internet.
We're not.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That's a great idea. Thanks, Dave, for calling.
You're welcome.
Let me just talk a little bit about the structure itself, because I don't think people understand about how you get information and what kinds of specific groups there are and how you can be put on a mailing list right? Let's say, for example, that you wanted to get all the, and since we've been talking about the White House today, all the press releases coming out of the White House. Now, theoretically, on the internet, you should be able to put yourself on a mailing list. So anytime a press release is released from the White House or something comes out, it's automatically sent to you. Is that not how it works?
Absolutely. If you want to do that, or you could just leave them there and search and figure out when there's something worthwhile.
So you could get then all the press releases from every congressman, every senator, every committee.
Not yet, but
I mean,
soon.
But theoretically, soon. That's how it would work.
That's what I want to see. Absolutely.
But you can do that now with other interest groups, right? There mm-hmm. are mailboxes Absolutely. That you can be... And this is where the glut comes in. You could be on the mailing list for so many mailboxes that every time they issue a mailing list and you get a press release or any kind of release, you're getting thousands of these a day.
Ah, but that's why you want your personal computer sitting between you and that glut. You mm-hmm. want your machine to be working for you, finding the right stuff for you. Mm-hmm. There's just way too much out there already. So going and filtering through, searching, finding just the issues that you care about, and your mm-hmm. machine is starting to know a lot about you. It knows what you like, what you don't like, what it is you read, what you didn't read. We're finding that also the government's communicating better with itself, God forbid, where the USGS, NASA, Environmental Protection Agency, NOAA are all working together to figure out whether we're warming up. And they're using the internet to do this.
Let's now go to Paul at the MIT Media Lab. Welcome to Science Friday.
Yeah, hi. My general question is, what happens to copyrights and copyrighted material when all this information is available over the net? In other words, how do you reward a creator or someone who writes a piece of fiction if you can just get one copy and then it's distributed from there?
Brewster, you want to answer that?
I deal with publishers all the time, and this is a real issue. How do we go and use this as a publishing medium when somebody can just pass the word and just take whatever they'd pull down and pass it to somebody else and you'd have an original? Well, the basic approach that we're taking on the internet is to try to centralize the distribution so that if you are the creator of the work, why not go and ask you for your work? That way you can charge whatever you'd like or restrict it based on who it is you want to give it to or not. If you were to go and take that from somebody else and then start republishing it and making money on it, then there are laws to kick in. That's not to say that it won't happen, but the idea is to make it easy for people to obey the law and use the internet as a direct contact between the creator and the consumer, as opposed to a lot of the store and forward, which is what we've had back in the old days when we used the phone systems to hop along through things like Usenet.
Quickly, about 10
seconds. I got a different approach. I've got advertisers. That's how I make my money. Rather than charging my listeners, I just get my money up front.
All right. I'd like to thank my guests, Carl Malamud, president of the Internet Multicasting Service, who made possible our broadcast today on the internet, and Brewster Kahle, president of Waze Incorporated. Also, special thanks to Ron Frederick and Steve Deering of Xerox's Palo Alto Research Center for helping connect us to the internet. And thank you for all you folks on the internet who got through and the hundreds who were not able to get through to us today. Thanks for participating.